172279, and it's the United States versus Edmund Hodges, and it's Ms. Gambino. Hi.
Morning. Judge Ravner, Judge Williams, and Judge Evans. In Mr. Hodges' case, there are two issues before the court. The first is that the jury in this case misinterpreted the jury instructions and wrongly believed that they had to automatically find Mr. Hodges guilty of conspiracy. They wrongly believed that they had to find him guilty of bank robbery and brandishing a firearm if they found him guilty of conspiracy. That is not the case. They were confused by the conspiracy, the aiding and abetting, and the third instruction, which instructs them to consider each count separately. In this particular case, it's clear that they did not or had some question about whether he actually participated in the robbery or the brandishing of the firearm, because, in fact, he was not present when the firearm was brandished. And although he had been in the supermarket earlier, he was not there at the time of the robbery either.
But given testimony by one of the co-conspirators that the use of the gun was discussed at the planning meeting, how can we view this as not being reasonably foreseeable as part of the conspiracy? And, I mean, wouldn't a jury be entitled to believe that testimony?
A jury would be entitled to believe the testimony that this was discussed. However, it was discussed two or three days prior to when the event happened. There was contradictory testimony in which there was a discussion between Mr. Knighton and the other three co-defendants about whether or not to use a gun. And certainly Mr. Hodges, not being present, would have had no actual knowledge, nor would it have necessarily been reasonably foreseeable to him that they would have carried the gun into the bank. Similarly, there was insufficient evidence on an aiding and abetting theory.
I don't see how it could not have been reasonably foreseeable to him that somebody would take the gun into the bank.
Well, in order...
If you're going to commit a bank robbery and you talk about using a gun, why wouldn't that just naturally follow that you're going to take the gun into the bank to commit the crime?
Because there was a disagreement about whether or not a gun should be used, and there was contradictory testimony about whether it was discussed at that particular meeting or not, and whether Mr. Hodges was present at the meeting when they discussed it. So for all of those reasons, if there's contradictory testimony with respect to what was done on a particular day, and then there is a robbery at which he is not present, there is no, you can't necessarily say it's reasonably foreseeable to him that they're going to use the gun, particularly when they've discussed not using it. Similarly, the jury could not have found him guilty based on an aiding and abetting theory because he had to actually facilitate the use of the weapon and have knowledge. And in this particular case, he had neither knowledge nor did he facilitate the use of the weapon. Simply facilitating the underlying crime is not sufficient. So there wasn't an appropriate basis or sufficient evidence for them to have found him guilty of brandishing the firearm. And they were wrong in believing they automatically had to find him guilty if they thought he was a participant in the conspiracy. The second issue before the court is the reasonableness of Mr. Hodges' sentence. The court in this case took the an opposite end approach to sentencing rather than looking, according to the parsimony principle, at what was sufficient but not greater than necessary. What the court did was say he was imposing a sentence that was sufficiently severe. And he did not address beyond listing the reasons for which he could consider a sentence outside the guidelines and for which this sentence was appropriate for Mr. Hodges, who was 22 at the time of the offense, had no prior criminal history other than two misdemeanors. There was argument at the time of sentencing that he was inappropriately placed in criminal history category 3 because he was on a sentence of court supervision at the time that he engaged in the bank robbery offense. And so Mr. Hodges, while he only had a retail theft and a possession of a driver's license, was treated as someone who was a much more serious offender. He had never been in prison before. He had a good education and family support, and he had a number of difficulties while he was in custody in addition to his general youth. And none of these things justified the 20-year sentence that the court imposed in this case.
And it never came out during the trial what motivated or prompted him to get involved in this, did it?
No, there was some suggestion that this was actually because of his roommate, Mr. Knighton, who was the one who had the weapon, who recruited the others, and who was the primary driver behind this particular offense.
Although it was his girlfriend who worked at the bank, Hodges' girlfriend.
That's correct. It was his girlfriend.
It truly is, Ms. Gambino, heartbreaking case. Just a heartbreaking case.
And, Your Honor, it's also the job of the district court under 3553A to give consideration to rehabilitation. And that certainly wasn't given anything, not even lip service, in this particular case, beyond the fact that the court said he didn't need any kind of drug treatment. But the court should consider all of these factors, and it's clear from the sentencing hearing that they were not properly considered. And the court's also directed under 3582A to consider that a sentence of imprisonment is not to be considered rehabilitation.
But if the court, with the mandatory sentence, we're really only talking about the difference between 151 and 156 on the guideline sentence, right? So the reality is, and I understand 5 months is a lot of time, and you know, I understand your other arguments as it relates to the conviction itself, but the district court's discretion was really in this 151 to 156, unless the court went down.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Actually, what we're talking about is a potential difference of 3 years, mm-hmm. because he imposed a sentence of 20 months. He was limited by the mandatory minimums to mm-hmm. a sentence of 17. 3 years or even 5 months is certainly a significant amount
right.
of time from the point of view of the person who has to serve that time. And I'd like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Yaden, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Ken Yaden, and I represent the United States in this matter. I'd like to start off with the jury instruction issue, which Mr. Hodges' counsel brought up first. First, the jury instructions were clear in this case on the conspiracy charge and followed the Seventh Circuit's instruction. And in fact, when the note came back from the jury, Hodges did not object to the court instructing the jury to continue to deliberate. The instructions stated that it is reasonable to assume that when the jury went back that they did read the instruction more carefully and saw that, no, in fact, if Mr. Hodges was found guilty of the conspiracy, he was not then automatically found guilty of the bank robbery and the firearm. Instead, that they had to find that he did those crimes were done in furtherance of and as a foreseeable consequence of the conspiracy.
Well, you know, you argued that the use of the gun was discussed at the planning meeting. What was the nature of that discussion? I mean, does the record tell us that? Was it discussed and rejected, or was there some agreement as to whether it was a good idea to use a gun? What was going on there?
The testimony from co-conspirator Knighton was that the gun was used, it was in the context of discussing the kidnapping, which was to precede the bank robbery, and that the gun was to be used for show purposes. And that's exactly what happened. The conspirators used the gun to intimidate and to force the first victim, Zayas, to comply with their instructions. In fact, looking at the record, there are four links in the evidentiary chain which lead to the conclusion that Mr. Hodges knew and that it was reasonably foreseeable to him that the gun would be used. First of all, at the planning meeting. And then secondly, when they actually kidnapped the first bank manager, Mr. Zayas, the gun was there in the van. Mr. Hodges was driving the van, and one of the other co-conspirators, Davis, used the gun to control Mr. Zayas by pointing it at his side and at his head.
So is that your... So that's the evidence that was introduced that placed Mr. Hodges in a position to have seen the gun during the robbery?
Just to have seen the gun during the kidnapping of Mr. Zayas. But there was additional evidence, too, Your Honor, which showed that Mr. Hodges was present when a gun was used, and that, therefore, since the gun had been a necessary part of the kidnapping crime, which preceded the bank robbery, that it was a necessity, and it was naturally foreseeable that when his co-conspirators, Knighton and Davis, went to the bank, that the gun would be there. I mean, the third link after the planning meeting and the kidnapping is that over the weekend, Mr. Zayas was held as a hostage in the hotel room under guard of the gun, and Mr. Hodges came into the hotel room over the weekend to interrogate Mr. Zayas. So therefore, when Monday morning came and it was time to do the bank robbery and to take Mr. Zayas from the hotel room to the bank, where he was needed to in order to open the vault, the gun had been an unnecessary part of forcing Mr. Zayas to cooperate so far. So it was foreseeable that they would use the gun. In fact, that's what they did. Mr. Zayas testified that he was told that as he walked through the parking lot and walked into the bank, that there would be a gun there at his side. So it's the government's position that the jury was correct in finding that Mr. Hodges was guilty of the 924C charge, Your Honors. The third issue is the sentencing hearing. The district court in this case followed the procedures set forth by this court in looking at the 3553A factors. It heard in detail what Mr. Hodges and his counsel said, and then went over his arguments carefully, and then made the following findings, stated that Mr. Hodges had been found guilty of a serious offense, that he had been found guilty of participating in a scheme to rob a bank where a gun was used, and that noted that the abducted bank victim employee had suffered severe emotional distress and that the safety of other police officers had they arrived were placed at risk. And then noted that this sentence would serve an important deterrent effect. Accordingly, it was appropriate for the court to give the sentence that it did. Your Honors, we ask that this court affirm the district court with respect to the sentence and the finding of guilty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yaden. Ms. Gambino has how much time?
Two and a half.
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, with respect to the kidnapping, since we've already addressed the meeting, it was not at all clear from the evidence that was introduced at trial that Mr. Hodges was present at the time of the kidnapping. The person who was kidnapped believed there were three people in the van with him. And
he was hooded, of course.
He was.
Hello.
But he also testified that he could see shapes through the pillowcase that he had. And the gun that was used at the time of the kidnapping, according to testimony, was passed from Knighton to Davis and was not actually displayed. It wasn't clear to Mr. Zayas whether it was a gun or a knife that they had. And with respect to the identity of the person in the van and the person in the hotel, Mr. Zayas testified that the same person who took him into the bank and spoke to him at going into the bank was the person who had been in the hotel with the gun over the weekend. And that person was not Mr. Hodges, it was Mr. Knighton. So there was conflicting testimony as to whether Mr. Hodges was ever present when the gun was used and whether it was reasonably foreseeable to him that it would have been. With regard to the sentencing hearing, it is still incomplete to... and wrong to say that you have to impose a sentence which is sufficiently severe rather than looking at what is the least possible sentence that can be imposed in a particular case. And based on all the facts that were presented about Mr. Hodges to the court, certainly imposing the sentence that he did of 20 years was far greater than anything necessary to serve all of the purposes of sentencing in that particular case.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gambino. Thank you, Mr. Yaden. And the case will be taken under advisement.